You are listening to WPVMLP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Mostly sunny skies today with a high near 86 degrees. A few clouds this evening, then becoming mostly clear overnight with a low near 58. Mostly sunny again on Saturday with a high near 87 degrees. A few clouds move in Saturday night with a low near 62. A few scattered afternoon showers and thunderstorms on Sunday, otherwise partly sunny with a high near 87. I'm meteorologist Angie Kathleen on Radio Asheville 103.7.
Welcome to Twice 5 Miles Radio, fertile ground for conversations worth listening to and remembering. I'm your host, James Nave. If you've been listening to this show for the last few years, you know that I've been collaborating with Allegra Houston on our project we call The Imaginative Storm. It's all about thinking, writing, imaginative intelligence, how you approach the world, how you get your stories out, how you move through each day with almost a festive sensibility, if you will, looking at things optimistically, knowing that the whole world spinning around is a bit of a collage. And you, the individual moving through that world, you have a lot of opportunities to make things of what you see in front of you, put things together in different ways, construct different combinations, create different variables. So the imaginative storm, even though we anchor it in writing, it's much more than that. It's a way of thinking. It's a philosophy, something that we're attempting to share with as many people as possible because we've discovered ways of going about the rhythms of life that can be quite helpful. And the best thing about all of this, it's fairly simple. Doesn't require a whole lot of study. Does require sitting back, taking it easy for a moment, and appreciating the range that you have. So in this show today, I'm talking with Allegra Houston about these ideas we have. This isn't an interview show as much as it is a conversation between two people. Allegra and I have known each other for over 25 years, so we have a great communication rhythm going. So what I'd like to do now is to air that conversation for you, give you a sense of what Allegra and I have been thinking about for the last 5 years, talking about and approaching these topics that are currently quite prominent in the culture: creativity, writing, language, communication, visibility, publishing, and multiple other things. So I begin this conversation by asking Allegra to reflect on what we know now that we didn't know before. So here's our conversation. Hope you enjoy it. What do we know now that we didn't know 20 years ago? And what's still really mysterious?
Well, I'm going back 2 years ago to the day that I was driving to Paonia, Colorado, to do a little workshop, just me, not the both of us. And we were on the phone as I was driving. I think this was the bit between Monte Vista and Saguache. And you said, you know what? We're actually not teaching people how to write. What we're teaching them is to use their imaginative intelligence. And that was the first time that phrase had come up. But when you said it, I kind of mentally leapt on it. And that explained a lot, because in those 25 years of working together, doing writing workshops, we knew that we weren't sending people away with a finished piece of work. We weren't helping them with whatever project they had on the go. We were doing writing exercises for the entire workshop. And we knew they were valuable, and we knew that we were helping people become better writers. But it was hard for us to explain why those writing exercises and what we were doing in those workshops, why they were making people better writers and why the people who did come loved them. But we found it kind of difficult. You remember, we found it difficult to explain to people who didn't understand what we were doing, what we were doing. And so when you, that day on the phone, and we were on the phone for about an hour and a half as I was driving through the back roads of Southern Colorado, when you said that day, actually, you know what? What we're doing is not just writing. It's bigger than writing. It's developing an imaginative intelligence. And we started talking about what that actually meant, what imaginative intelligence is. You've always said that the problem is not that people aren't creative enough. The problem is there's just too much creativity. We're naturally creative. Creativity is our birthright. But we hadn't quite found a way of marrying that idea to the writing that we were doing, because writing was our kind of delivery mechanism, if you like, for cultivating your imaginative intelligence. And that day, we understood it. Or we began to understand it. We began our conversation about why creativity is a human birthright, why it's innate, in what way is it innate, how do we access it, and why does that matter? How does it improve your life if you have a creative practice? And what, obviously, what we're doing in our weekly Zoom on Saturdays and our in-person workshops and our books and courses and what have you is encouraging people, making it easy for them to have a creative practice. And the lovely thing about writing is it's about one of the cheapest creative practices you can have. All you need is pen and paper. You don't need art materials or traveling or whatever.
So what do we know now that we didn't know then, and what remains a mystery? Certainly, imaginative intelligence is a mystery. I have always said, and it is true, I've always thought, creativity, what's the big deal? Everybody talks about how they want to be creative. I want to be more creative. I'm going to study creativity. And I've played around with that idea for years myself. And I did come to the conclusion that the problem with creativity is there's too much of it because it's everywhere. For me, imaginative intelligence, it allows us to organize what appears so often as a collage of confusion. What am I going to do with all of this? My intelligence, my ability to process, to predict, to anticipate, to image, to see, to vision, all of that is part of my intelligence, and my imagination plays a big role in formulating and phrasing the patterns on the screen and remaking those patterns on the screen so that I can look at something logically, mathematically, and see all of the relationships between the things that I'm working with. So it boils down to mathematics, organization, and strategy.
For you, it does.
And I think it boils down to, because mathematics, organization, and strategy, if you watch ants work, if you watch animals move, mm-hmm. if you watch the way birds fly to the migration, if you're in Western North Carolina, as you and I were recently for the TEDx Asheville talk, which you offered the subject imaginative intelligence as your talk, you see the broad-winged hawks return almost the same time every year. Mathematics, organization, and strategy equals, I suspect, instinct. And for us, we call it intuition. But I think intuition, instinct, imaginative intelligence, all that blends together. And it's a beautiful organizational principle that we have at our fingertips, and we all have it. And the only thing that's asked of us is to accept that benefit and then practice it.
Asked of us by whom? I mean, by ourselves, by our human nature.
By the air, by our human nature,
right.
By whatever the entire system asks of all of its creatures, not just you and me, But everything is being inspired, moved.
It asks of a hawk to be a hawk. It asks of a starling to fly in those fabulous, absolutely mathematical patterns. And it asks of us humans having evolved this imagination and imaginative intelligence that we have. And it is absolutely a product of evolution. We are not the only creatures on the planet that have imagination or indeed that have creativity. I discovered recently that canaries improvise songs and then they decide to choose which they decide which one they choose, which song they think each year is most likely to be appealing to female canaries. And they change their song every year. That's creativity. If that's not creativity, I don't know what is. So I find it really interesting that we have that creativity, which we think of as so, you know, uniquely human, is really not. And it's a product of evolution. And so therefore there is, as there is in every species, a species imperative to use those qualities that the species is endowed with, whether it's ants and the incredible organization that they have, or starlings or skunks or whatever, and humans as well. Although when you say it's mathematics, organization, and strategy, that makes me kind of feel a bit terrified because I'm not very good at math and I'm not very good at strategy. So for me, it's absolutely organization, but it's a different kind of organization. It's a different approach to organization. Usually when we think of organizing something, we think of using our rational mind and going logically and drawing spreadsheets and making tables and columns of this and that. And that's not how imaginative intelligence works, because it's more like an ocean current. You know, it's working under the surface. You can't see it, but it's very powerful and it's there. And it draws us towards imaginative experimentation, actually, different. I think it draws us towards many different possibilities of organization, which we then either emotionally, instinctively, or rationally choose which we like best.
I suggest that we're doing it all at the same time.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And the rational part is just simply one category of all of the categories that we have functioning all at once. You say you're not very good at math. Is that true?
Mildly true.
Mildly true.
Well, actually more than, no, it's only mildly untrue. We'll go back that way. I can add, I can subtract, I can divide, I can multiply. Once we get further than that, I start to struggle.
You are struggling with academic math.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But when you say mathematical, I think of and I don't think I'm alone in my mind goes to, you know, algebra, geometry, trigonometry, calculus classes in school.
So does everybody else's.
Right.
And I may have told you this story, but it's worth bringing into this conversation again. I have a friend named Maurice, and Maurice lives in France. And once a few years ago, many years ago now, maybe 15, we were at a writing workshop. I was teaching imaginative storm writing in Normandy with a group of coaches, and Maurice was one of them. And Maurice and I were sitting around at lunch, and I was telling him how bad I was at math and how I just had no capacity at all for math. And he said, well, how much money do you have in your pocket? And I said, oh, I've got 25 euro or whatever. He said, how long would it take you to walk from this table to that car? I told him, oh, about 20 seconds. He said, how long would it take you to get from here to Paris? I said, well, I'd have to go get in the car, catch the train, buy the ticket. It'll cost so much. Then maybe, you know, 3 hours and 15 minutes. So we did a few more of those. And every time he would ask me a mathematical question, I could give him exactly the right answer. And he finally said, well, you're really not bad at math at all. He said, you're very, very good at math. Most people are excellent mathematicians. They just don't have the background to write it down.
Well, that's analogous to most people are actually very creative. They just don't have the background to write it down. And that is one of the things that we've discovered, in fact. I mean, again, I think you're right in saying that perhaps that ability to parse the world in a mathematical way. How long will it take me to get to Paris? How long will it take me to walk across the room? How much money do I have in my pocket? That is probably also, if not exactly innate, but I mean, pretty close to in the way that we're saying that creativity is a human birthright. But I guess it's an interesting analogy. I haven't thought of this before. Many people, myself included, because I never used to think of myself as a creative person, many people, myself included, look at the question, am I creative, in the same way that they look at the question, am I good at math, and give what you're now saying is not an accurate answer.
No, it's not.
And one of the things we've discovered, and I think this is, we've always kind of known for the whole 25 years that we worked together, that basically, you know, anyone can write something interesting, intriguing, satisfying to them in 10 minutes. That's one of the principles that we've always gone on. And that has been proven so spectacularly over the last 5 years. Before the last 5 years, we didn't have a sort of weekly thing. We just did these sort of one-off workshops, you know, whatever it was, like two, maybe three times a year at most, probably, right? But now we have this weekly event online, and people zooming in from all over the world. But so we can see the difference in people's writing over the course of those 5 years of writing, you know, what I call throwaway writing for 10 minutes every Saturday, but not just the difference in their writing, the difference in them, because these are now people, many of whom who arrive in the call and they say, oh, I'm not a writer. But what's happened is they've kind of, I don't want to say sunk into, but they've settled into the knowledge of their own creativity and accepted it. And given up those thoughts of, oh, I'm not creative, or I'm not good enough, or I can't write well enough, and maybe I'll never be published, and all that kind of nonsense, because frankly, a lot of that doesn't even matter. But that's another conversation. Point being, they settled into the knowledge of what you've been saying. But, you know, you can't tell anybody anything, right? You can say to people, you know, creativity is your birthright. And they'll go, yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, actually, I'm not really very creative. But when those people write for 10 minutes every Saturday, once a week, for however long, they start to see that they've been, you know, telling themselves a story that's not necessarily true. And certainly that is absolutely the case for me. I used to think I wasn't creative. And, you know, I'm not as creative as some people. But, you know, we're all on various spectrums of one kind or another, and creativity is a spectrum too. And, you know, I'm not as creative as our friend Alex, who is a musician and an artist and can write and can code and can do all these things. But I am creative, and that's fine. It's not a, you know, it's not a horse race. It doesn't matter. Nobody's trying to come first. We're just trying to do what feeds our spirit as human beings. We're self-realizing as human beings to the best of our ability, and exploring and pushing ourselves and surprising ourselves, because as we push ourselves, me, all the people on the call, you, as we push ourselves, we realize that actually, oh, actually couldn't have done that 5 years ago. It's the practice of playing with your creativity that stretches it and strengthens it. It's just like a muscle, right?
It is the practice. And I'm also thinking of even expanding this idea of I'm not creative, or I'm more creative, or this one's more creative. Like Alex is very creative because he does these things in these categories. I'm thinking now I would like to get away from the idea that we must discuss creativity. And creativity is something that we have. It's something that's our birthright. And as I'm listening to this idea of the birthright, and I have been saying it for a long time, creativity is your birthright. I'm thinking now of a big city. I'm thinking of New York City. That's the city I'm familiar with. And people may or may not have been to a big city, but most people have been to some kind of city sometime in their life. New York City is a good example of that, because when you get to New York City and you step off the train, or you get out of the taxi from the airport, and you step on the corner in front of your hotel or the apartment you're going to stay in or wherever you're headed, you are arriving into the city. And when you arrive in the city casts you in its play. You become part of the city. You absorb what the city has to offer. And I'm thinking of creativity as the same way. Instead of us having creativity, we are born into it in the same way that we enter a city. And when you enter the domain of creativity, it infuses you. You infuse it. You become part of it. And the difference between New York and creativity, you can go to New York and then you can leave it behind. And when you leave New York behind, you're no longer part of New York. The vibe is gone. But you can never get away from creativity because you're born into the totality of it. And when you come into creativity like that, time doesn't exist. The only thing that exists is the moment, right now.
Well, the analogy is you're born into creativity in the way that you arrive in New York. So if you leave New York, I think that means you die in this particular analogy. But it's true. I mean, one of the interesting things about doing this 10-minute timer thing is that it seems like so much pressure. You know, it seems like this short period of time. But what it does is it, as you say, it throws you into the present. It throws me into the present. I don't have a sense of time going by. I'm just writing something off the top of my head, or it could be if I were painting, I could be painting something off the top of my head. You know, I could be drawing what I don't know instead of writing what I don't know. As you do that, when you're immersed in a creative flow, time does disappear. And I think most people know that feeling in one way or another. Oh, I lost track of the time. I was doing something. I completely lost track of the time, because you're in the moment. You're in the present. So the whole concept of time kind of just disappears. But when you say creativity is there and you kind of are born into it, you enter into it, I think that's absolutely the case, because your creativity or my creativity or anyone's doesn't exist in a vacuum. We are aware of millennia of painting, of writing, of thinking, of philosophizing, of imagining futures, of, clothing design, of, inventing games or whatever. So there is this gigantic city, if you like, of creativity that we are born into and we are informed by. And what we do with it, as you say, what we do with it is our choice. You know, what part of it do we want to respond to? You know, are we more interested in writing? In other words, we want to go to that nightclub, or are we more interested in sales strategies and we want to go to that nightclub? Because I think that's one of the other problems with the way creativity is talked about, is it's talked about in a narrow fashion, as if it it only refers to sort of arts and crafts, but it doesn't. Thinking anything new is by definition creative. A new thought is creative. A new sales strategy, a new set play for your soccer team, and a new anything, a new way of arranging your closet. When you decide, well, I think that chair looks better here, not where it used to be, that's a creative choice. So this restriction of whether you're creative or not to whether you draw, paint, play an instrument, whatever, is misleading. And I think it's one of the things that alienates people from that birthright, alienates them from their own creativity, because they don't recognize how broad a range it covers.
And it's also a modern idea to measure. We're going to measure it. Did you make a painting? Did you create a book? Do you have a bestseller? Have you built the beautiful structure? Can I measure this? Can I compare this to what we think of as work?
Well, it's also it's the difference between the result and the process. And we, particularly in the U.S., live in a culture that is extremely focused on result, on product. But creativity is not about the product. It's living. I mean, as long as we're living and breathing, we're being creative. So the activity of being creative does not depend on a product at all. It doesn't have to have some, you know, culturally verified result.
And everything we do is brand new. There's no way for an action to be anything other than original and new. It's never been done before. Now, there's variations on it, and people attempt to copy other things, but even the copy is brand new because it's the version that's being created by the person in that moment. So this whole idea of it's got to be brand new, it's new, that's also worth taking off the table. It's so obvious. How could it be anything but new? Because it's never happened before.
Well, it goes back to this idea of measuring, because that, you know, it's like, well, how new is it? You know, can we measure the newness of this thing? Can we measure the originality of this product? And I think that's just all a distraction. And as I say, something that alienates people from not just something that their creativity is your birthright, but creativity is who you are. Your personal creativity, and this is, we're coming back to imaginative intelligence here. In my mind, creativity is an expression of your imaginative intelligence. It's imaginative intelligence is far more than simply creativity, but creativity is a way of living it. It's an expression of it. And when you're alienated from that, it's like gagging somebody and they can't speak. They don't have the expression, the ability to express themselves, who they are. The way I look at it, the way you express yourself in the world and to yourself is in what you value, what you find beautiful, what blows your skirt up, what you do that little bit differently, and it doesn't have to be a lot, but whatever it is that you do that's yours, it's like, yeah, I'm doing that. I'm not doing that because somebody told me to. I'm not just simply, you know, connecting the dots, which already have a 1, 2, 3, 4 next to them. I'm doing something that I'm generating. That's your creativity in action. That is the expression of who you are that is held. That's the intelligence that holds your identity, that makes you feel like yourself, like you have a place in the world, that you are worthwhile. You're not just a number.
It also brings up the idea of power. The great power we have to make these choices. We feel somehow, and I say we, being people that I've talked to a lot and myself as well, sometimes we feel like we don't have the right to do that. Maybe we should be more subservient to what we think we should do. We want to make a choice, but maybe we make choices that compromise that still small yet powerful voice that's pushing us in a direction that we know we want to go, but we maybe just don't quite know how to go there. So as you practice this idea of the abundance of creativity removed from you as a responsibility you have to do something with because it's yours, moving it into not so much a responsibility, but a delightful proposition, like it's the full Eden. The garden blooms and you're part of it, and you have to do very little in order to participate except to acknowledge your presence in it and to accept whatever it is that you are able to do within the context of that acknowledgement. Accept that that is your birthright and whatever that happens to be. And I'm thinking now, so many people watch the great series on Netflix or Amazon or HBO, some of these fantastic series of TV programs. That's a dramatic act of creativity to watch and appreciate and enjoy those programs. So people might not think of that as an act of creativity because we're so wrapped up in making product. So there would be very little difference in seeing a fantastic series on TV and going to a Broadway show and watching the show in terms of how your imaginative intelligence processes that. And so there's the range is what I'm suggesting is so much greater than what we in our culture allow us to consider.
Well, you know, you watch a show or you go to a play or a musical or wherever you go to, and you have ideas about it. You have an emotional response to it. It affects you differently than it affects me. It affects all of us differently. And I'm not sure that I would put that into the basket of what's creative, but I mean, does it matter? The point is that you are imaginatively engaging with other human beings' imagination, which is a delightful thing and also something that our species is designed to do. But I want to go back to your idea of power because it's exactly right. In the world that we have, which is so product-driven, result-driven, bank balance driven, we are often hamstringing ourselves because we think that, yes, am I entitled to, you know, write a book? No, that's what writers do. You know, am I entitled to paint a picture? No, that's what painters, you know, famous artists do. I'm not famous. And that's a different tribe of people, which I'm not in. And that's just simply a cultural idea that we've imbibed. But what it does do, absolutely, is strip us of our power. And one of the things that we've noticed over the last 5 years is how much more powerful personally people have become, as at least partly as a result of exercising, valuing, and acknowledging and being acknowledged for their own creativity. Conversely, authoritarian regimes, who do they clamp down on first? The artists, the creative people, because they're a power source set up in opposition to the authoritarian regime, because everybody that's not with us is against us, obviously, if you're authoritarian. So the first people you go after are the people who are comfortable in their own individual power, meaning those people who have a confidence in expressing their creativity.
That's absolutely true. And the people that are being pursued by the police, tossed in the clinker, sometimes lined up and shot against the wall, depending on what country you live in, are indeed the ones that have chosen to pursue with a fierceness that only belongs to them. They pursue the desires they have to make things.
So that's interesting. They're not more creative, but they're maybe more fierce.
That's correct.
I like that.
They're much
idea.
More fierce.
They're more fierce, but they aren't more creative than anybody else necessarily.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's absolutely, absolutely right. Because I am of the mind, and if I can, I keep preaching this. I don't have much of a congregation, but I still preach it. Every move you make, every act you take, everything you do is pure creative. There's no such thing as not being creative as a human being. What we tend to do is we try to round up the herd and put it in a pen and ship it off to Chicago for processing in the beef factory or something. But the free range sensibility of creativity to me is it's everywhere. And so there's no way for you or for me or anybody out there to avoid being creative. You can't help it, because that is what keeps you alive. Now, the fierce person who drives forward in one direction without any compromise towards some goal that expresses something inside of them that irritates them, that boils their blood, that makes them fierce, makes them so driven that they don't know what time it is, they don't care. That's a choice or a calling or an animal instinct they're following. But it doesn't make the one watching the fierce one charge over the hill any more or less creative. It's just a different set of choices.
Yeah, they're just not as fierce. What I would say, I think that the choice that we make, I don't agree with you, if indeed I'm understanding correctly what you said. I don't agree with you that every single thing you do, that everyone does all the time, is creative. I think the choice is often made to suppress one's own personal creativity in aid of some desire to conform to something, to not be powerful, simply to not be powerful. But that's the decision, is to suppress your creativity. The decision is not to exercise your creativity. With no decision, you're exercising it. The decision can be not to, for whatever reason, which leads us back to the number one regret of the dying. I wish I had had the courage to live a life true to myself and not the life others expected of me. Living a life true to yourself is that everyday, every waking moment, creativity. Living a life not true to yourself is that decision to suppress that, to suppress your individuality.
Do you think people actually make that decision? I'm going to suppress my creativity.
No, well, they don't make it like that. But they make a decision that suppresses it. I'm going to do what my parents want me to do. I'm going to fit in. I hated being the weird one at school, so I'm not going to be the weird one anymore. I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to be as unweird as I possibly can. I mean, I suppose that in its way is also a creative decision when you take it to that kind of extreme. But there are plenty of people who just follow unthinkingly. It was a decision that was made to do that. It may not have been a thought out decision. It may not have been a reasoned decision. It may not have been an entirely conscious decision, but it was a choice.
I would suggest that to make the decision to go in the direction that you intuitively know you don't want to go in might take more creative effort than to go in the direction that your spirit is calling you to go in. Because when you go in a direction that you don't want to go in and you make a choice to do that, that's a complicated dance with psychology. And it requires a great deal of creativity to manage something like that over the long haul. Now,
you may be right. You're reinventing yourself.
You're reinventing yourself in the opposite.
Without quite having that as a concept of what you're doing.
It's the opposite direction of fierceness.
Yeah.
But then it becomes a fierce reinvention taking you away. And so it takes a lot more energy, a lot more effort,
It definitely takes a lot more effort.
Yes.
And you see that in people. They look tired.
And when you are going in the direction, and they do look tired, and when you're going in the direction of that kind of effort, that requires amazing amount of invention. You have to invent a persona that is counter to who you are, and you do it so convincingly that everybody believes you, including yourself, except for that little part
that says, I know I'm going to die one day,
and damn it, I'm regretting it. Somewhere along the way.
On your deathbed, you're like, okay, now I can't suppress that voice anymore.
And then you have to express it. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so maybe the expression is you express it in your moment of death or whatever.
Mm.
But that's why the more I talk about this, the more I realize we are creatures that make things. And to make something means to organize it. To make a character that is counter to who you were born to be requires great acting skill, even if you've never been to even a single acting class.
Well, maybe that's true. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. We all invent ourselves. We all, and often we change course as we do that. We reinvent ourselves. We live, certainly in my case, I don't go and work 9 to 5 in an office anymore like I did for 11 years or 9 years specifically, and then kind of again for another 2. I definitely reinvented myself a couple of times in my life. But I think you're right. Maybe everybody does. As a sort of a gradual invention of themselves as they, reach adulthood and join the world and decide who they want to be in the world. And as I say, then maybe you think, I don't know. Well, I don't think I like that one. Let me try on something different. And then perhaps you reach a point where you think, I don't actually have to try on something different. I don't have to try and be a different kind of person. Which certainly, I'm saying this from personal experience. I did that a few times. Eventually, if you are malleable in yourself enough to move from one persona to another, you find one that fits. It's sort of like trying on clothes, really. And when you settle into a place where you're not having to invent yourself from an external perspective, then you can invent yourself from an internal perspective. Then you can go towards what you don't know and towards possibility rather than trying to make yourself something that you have a preconceived external idea of.
Now, coming back to the work that we've been doing for the last 20 years, and especially in the last 5 years with this group on Saturday and whatnot, I've been involved with this imaginative storm thinking for a long time. In the last 5 years, I've focused more and more and more on the phenomenology of the experience rather than whether I can write something or not. I mean, I can write and I enjoy it and it's fun. And sure, I can do it with great ease. But that's not what I'm most intrigued by. I am intrigued by the process of this imaginative twirling that allows me to see rooms full of ideas and thoughts and combinations that I wasn't able to glimpse before, even though they've always been there. So this idea of creativity, so abundant, animal instinct, fierce, intuition, maybe we're going at it wrong. That's all has emerged out of this process that I'm thinking of. And one of the things that I've noticed in the work that I've been doing with you for the last 5 years, at first it was confusing when I started to see all of these moving parts. I didn't know how to organize them, but I didn't resist it either because it was so delightful. Even if it was confusing, it didn't matter. I got a lot of pleasure out of it. But lately, there's been some kind of organizational principle that's kicked in. Part of my rational mind, maybe, certainly part of my imaginative and intelligence, that allows me to not only see the images, but to be able to speak more clearly about what I'm experiencing in respect to pushing back on some of the old ways that we've seen creativity. We've seen writing. The old ways we look at ourselves, thank you, Madison Avenue, and all of the advertising businesses and the movies and everything has influenced us. But I am now in a different power, and it's not a power that I have. It's not my power. It is a power I've noticed that is there that I can access, and it informs me.
When you talk about Madison Avenue and movies and advertising, we're in a dialogue with all of that. I mean, that's part of the city of creativity that we're born into. So we are in dialogue with all of that. And we choose creatively the bits and pieces that we want to go toward or move away from. You like something, you don't like something. It works for you. You know, that phrase of, you know, yeah, that works. Or no, that doesn't work. It doesn't. And that's the idea of organization, I guess. When it works, it feels organized in some way that makes, if not rational sense, at least imaginative sense. And if it doesn't work, like, you know, you see a picture and it just doesn't work, or you write a piece and for some reason it's just not happening, it's not working. That's a sort of interior sense of organization, but also of possibility, because if this isn't working, it means some other arrangement might work. And that's interesting. That's, you know, that's seeing those rooms full of possibilities and ideas. And that is a position of power. So that's where the power comes from. Power is possibility. And that's why I don't know is a more powerful place than I know, because if I know, there's no possibility for anything else. But if I don't know, and if we write what we don't know, we have a huge range of potential. And all of those images of what we might be, the kind of life we might live, what we might look like, dress like, paint like, write like, those are all possibilities. And we are surrounded by, I mean, not just surrounded, we're swimming in this endless, infinite realm of creative possibility. And I'm looking at that bush outside the window that's swaying in the wind. My imagination, my creative potential can make something of that, can appreciate the beauty of the movement, can predict some of the movement, can sort of frame what I'm looking at and then rack focus to the trees beyond. All of that, every moment is available to us as a creative opportunity. And all it takes is being aware. But that, again, that's this misconception that creativity is something one practices in one's spare time. It's a hobby or whatever.
I mean, obviously it's not a hobby for those anointed artists and writers and what have you, but for the rest of us, well, it's something we do in our spare time. It's a hobby. It's not really that necessary, but in fact, it's the expression of who we are, how we individually are. You would look at that bush. You would see something different from what I see, but we can't express that really, except in a creative way. I can't see what you see. You can't see what I see unless I find an artistic way of expressing that. Artistic expression is not the same thing as creativity and creative expression. I am expressing my creativity right now by enjoying that bush. If I painted it or was able to compose a tune that somehow was inspired by it, then I would be expressing that in an artistic way. Some people move naturally towards artistic expression and some people don't, and that to varying degrees. But the creativity that underlies that is the ocean we're all swimming in.
And I think this is a great place for us to put a pause in our conversation because we have run out of time. We'll come back and do it again sometime soon.
We will.
So there you go, my friends. Thus concludes my conversation with Allegra Houston. I enjoyed this romp we had, and I think I'll invite her back to do more conversations. As we finish up the show, I would like to just focus once more on this imaginative storm approach that we are working with. On our Saturday calls, we ask people to look at an image, generate words on a piece of paper. We collect words and phrases from each person to create a community list. So everybody has the private list and they have their community list. So they usually have about 40 different images, words they can work from to compose something. And then we hold a 10-minute time frame open for them to do it in. And 10 minutes is really quite short. It's also quite long. So what I'd like to do is to close the show by reading a poem that I generated in 10 minutes while I was participating in the Saturday calls. It's titled Miss Hyatt's Opera House, The Music Remains. I wish I could tell you how to hold a fiddle, or why your fingers belong on the string alive air, full of new moments headed to old memories and sad endings when the endings come. I wish I could tell you who played in tune. I wish I could tell you how to hold the fiddle. These secrets belong to those who are gone, left the world, forgotten, behind. I'm without sound tonight here in Manila. Silence that includes names I wish I could remember. Silence that includes songs I do remember. Listen to the men, mostly men back then in the 60s, standing late night in the Westgate parking lot. Trucks backed up, cases open. The French Broad River below, going to Tennessee, heading into the foam of next year. Hold my fiddle and I will tell you to love me. Frankie and Johnny said that. The moon must have hung above the parking lot. Stars certainly hung there. Time didn't hang around. It was too busy chasing the French Broad River. I wish I could tell you how to hold a fiddle. Let's praise for a moment and say a prayer, and then holler loud, it's midnight, it's midnight. I was a boy when I first held a string. Old men with sad stories dropped in and out, and then in and out again. Love was there, a train was there in the story. Hear it coming, Orange Blossom Special, coming round the bend. God help me, there's always a bend in this story, and a father, and men I won't remember. Old goats, all of them, mostly dead now, as the river will remind you. Come, let's hold the fiddles together. Hear the music. The old men are gone. The music remains. And that was Miss Hyatt's Opera House, The Music Remains. Miss Hyatt's Opera House was on Brevard Road. It was a small house that Miss Hyatt lived in, and the garage was where all the Appalachian fiddlers and other players gathered on Thursday nights and other nights as well to play the tunes. It's gone, but not forgotten. And the other thing that's gone, our time. Our time together is gone, and we've arrived at the end of the show, so I would like to say thank you ever so much for listening to Twice 5 Miles Radio, fertile ground for conversations worth listening to and remembering. I'm your host, James Nave. Walter Parks, thank you for our theme song, walterparks.com, for more on Walter's music. Devine Dial, thank you for managing WPVM-FM in Asheville. Robin Collier and Mike Tilley, thank you for doing the same with KCEI, Cultural Energy Radio in Taos, New Mexico. I'm in Taos right now finishing this show. Yesterday, I saw Robin Collier. He was outside the local health food store raising money for his radio station. It's a community radio station, and it's definitely supported by the community. So had a nice chat with Robin. He's trying to get a new tower so he can broadcast further, and I wish him all the luck in the world. He's an undaunted sort of fellow, and he's supported me very well, as Devine Dial has in Nashville, so I'm much appreciative of that. And if you'd like to join us anytime for our Saturday Zoom call, the door's always open. We'd love to have you. It's a great community. ImaginativeStorm.com is where you can find the link to join us. So I think that's pretty much it for now. I do appreciate your time. Appreciate you showing up and being part of this community. And I do hope you can manage to come back sometime soon. And until then, if I'm lucky, I'll catch you on that turnaround somewhere down the line.
Sorrowful caban. I was born in Lincoln County, and the son of a country wife am I. Out of all the flowers growing wild in yon forest, you're the fairest rose on which I've laid an eye. Left for me hard with the door, and I'll be gone, and I don't know if I'll be back again. God as my guard, and the champion of the round, off to holy wars to fight the Saracen. I was born in Lincoln County, and the son of country wife am I. Out of all the flowers growing wild in yon forest, you're the fairest rose on which I've laid an eye. While you're away, does your spouse turn a whore, or a chastity belt maiden while crusaders at war? I'm tired of my chain mail, my armor makes me sore. You will, but my love, I cannot stay. Dry your eyes and we'll share a parting kiss. Wait until the advent of that day, when I'm home and gone is sadness such as this. I was born in Lincoln County, and the son of a country wife am I. Out of all the flowers growing wild in yon forest, you're the fairest rose on which I've laid an eye.